And you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. This is the Thursday night special, and we're going to be doing a show on, because it's the 100th anniversary, November 19th, 1915, when the state of Utah shot down and murdered, under the guise of executing Joe Hill, the great. And here is now, we're going to start the show.
Well, now that says most of it. This is the rest of it. We have fed you all for 1,000 years, and you ail us till unfed. Though there's never a dollar of all your wealth, but mark the workers dead. We have yielded our best to give you rest, and you lie on a crimson wall. That it will be the price of all your wealth. Good God, we have paid in full. There's never a mind-blown skyward now, but we're buried alive for you. And there's never a wrecked drift doorward now, but we are a ghastly crew. Go and reckon our dead by the forges red and the factories where we've been. Then it will be the price of your cursed wealth. Good God, we have paid it in. We have fed you all for 1,000 years. For that was our doom, you know. From the days when you chained us in your fields, after the strike of a week ago, you have taken our lives and our husbands and wives and called in your legal share. Then it will not be the price of your lawful wealth. Good God, we have bought it fair.
And that was Eugene Popular, golden voice of the great Southwest. We have fed you all for 1,000 years. As I said, we're doing a special tonight because it's the centennial celebration of Joe Hill's life. 100 years ago today, November 19th, 1915, Joe Hill, songwriter, poet, artist, humorist, hobo, organizer, fellow worker, was shot down by the state of Utah by a firing squad. Convicted for the most part of being an effective Union man. He was Joe Hill. Songs have become an inextricable part of America and the world's DNA. His words, deeds, and martyrdom, the lore of American Union movement, as demonstrated by Howard Zinn's of People's History of the United States, history books have a tendency to be written in the view of the winners, the powerful, and the well-heeled, with little mention of the plight of the common man. You would think that safe working conditions, child labor laws, the eight-hour day, overtime, pensions, vacations, workers' rights, benefits, and the idea of a livable wage came out of the benevolent mind of the so-called captains of industry. Well, in fact,
KKFI?
They came out of the struggle, sweat, hard work, and blood. Yes, the blood of the employee who demanded these rights so their children and children's children could enjoy a better life. The progressive movement, populated by Lucy Parsons, Eugene V. Debs, Brother Jones, Joe Hill, and many others, is lightly covered in history books at best, and at worst, unspoken of. Joe Hill is part of our history, of working people's history. He gave his life for the common man. It is our duty, as members of this working class, to celebrate Joe Hill, his life, and his work. We need to tell a story, sing his songs, speak his words, we need to have a long memory. So in another 100 years, our descendants will again solemnly mark this date. So in accordance with this wish, we have gathered here to sing his songs, tell his story, his vision for a better world, and about the Union that he loved so well, recalling his last words to Big Bill Haywood, "Don't mourn, organize." We are going back to 1915 and have a little memorial meeting tonight, remembering Joe Hill's last words as he walked to the place of his execution. He said, "I die fighting, not as a coward. I die with a clear conscience." And then to the firing squad, as the guard in charge said, "Ready, aim," Joe yelled, "Fire!" And now, the Wobbly Doxology. Back in 1912, you could hear this on the streets of Spokane and of Kansas City. You could hear the stump speech. "Fellow workers, the industrial workers of the world mean to organize the entire working class into one big union, the OBU. What is the working class, fellow workers? Well, the working class is anyone who has a job and makes wages. I don't care if you're a college professor or if you're a ditch digger. You're a member of the working class, so be proud of it. Why, that middle class is just a joke told to us by the bosses to keep us fighting one another. Now, the industrial workers of the world mean to organize the entire working class into one big union, the OBU, all skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled workers into one union. Then we're going to call a general strike. A strike like that, it'll last 30 minutes. Then we're going to take this thing apart and put it back together so it makes some sense. Put the means of production in the hands of those who produce. Produce for use, not for profit. Abundance for the workers, nothing for parasites." "Are you cold, forlorn, and hungry? Are there lots of things you lack? Is your life filled with misery? Then dump the bosses off your back. Are your clothes all torn and tattered? Are you living in a shack? Would you have your troubles scattered? Then dump the bosses off your back.
Are you almost split asunder? Loaded like some long-eared jack? Boob, why don't you buck like thunder and dump the bosses off your back? All these agonies you suffer, you could end with one big whack. Stiffen up, you ornery duffer, and dump the bosses off your back."
Any resemblance between current economic conditions and the preamble to the IWW Constitution is entirely intentional. The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. We find the centering of the management of industries into fewer and fewer hands makes the trade unions unable to cope with the ever-growing power of the employing class. The trade unions foster a state of affairs which allows one set of workers to be pitted against another set of workers in the same industry, thereby helping defeat one another in wage wars. Moreover, the trade unions aid the employing class to mislead the workers into the belief that the working class have interests in common with their employers. These conditions can be changed in the interests of the working class, upheld only by an organization formed in such a way that all members in any one industry, or in all industries if necessary, cease work whenever a strike or lockout is on in any department thereof, thus making an injury to one an injury to all. Instead of the conservative motto, a fair day's wage for a fair day's work, we must inscribe on our banner the revolutionary watchword, abolition of the wage system. It is the historic mission of the working class to do away with capitalism. The army of production must be organized not only for everyday struggle with the capitalist, but also to carry on production when capitalism shall be overthrown. By organizing industrially, we are forming the structure of the new society within the shell of the old.
All for one and one for all. Arise, ye
final stand.
Workers of the World, Awaken.
One of the many songs I wrote for my union, the Industrial Workers of the World. Our little red songbook to fan the flames of discontent is one of the most important organizing tools. See a pamphlet, no matter how good, is never read more than once, but a song is learned by heart and repeated over and over. But a biography of Joe Hill, you say? No, let's not spoil good writing paper with such nonsense. I am a citizen of the world. The exact spot where I first saw the light of day is such of slight importance that it deserves no comment. I will only say that I have done what little I could to bring the fans of flame closer to my goal. I first wrote those words over 100 years ago. My point was that I didn't want the story to be about me, about my life. I was an immigrant, an oppressed working man, like millions of others, nothing special, except for my music, my songs, my drawings, my poems, the unions that I fought for. That was special. That was the story I told. Besides, it was clear that I had nothing to lose. They were going to execute me regardless of the facts. At first, I thought I would never be convicted on such ridiculous evidence. You be the jury. On January 10, 1914, John G. Morrison and his son were closing the Salt Lake City grocery store when two men came in and shot and killed him and his 17-year-old son, Arling. It was not a robbery. Nothing was taken. It was more an assassination. It was personal. John Morrison was an ex-copper. He had plenty of enemies. In fact, months before, there was an altercation right out in the street. Shots were fired between him and one of his enemies. But me, there was no evidence that I ever met the man or his family. So there's no motive. No weapon was found. Surviving witnesses said there were two men, and one of them had a body build similar of my own. That was their evidence against me. Yes, I shot and wounded that night, but here's the kicker. The prosecution had no evidence that the Morrison's gun was ever fired that night. Plus, these were rough times. There were at least four other men with gunshot wounds in Salt Lake City that night. I know, many people, including my wobbly brothers and sisters, said, "Why don't you just tell what happened? Why were you shot? What's the true story?" But in my day, a man with honor did not kiss and tell. As I explained, I was shot by a jealous lover. I told that much at the time. But who else was involved? Well, I figured that was just nobody's business. Besides, I may be a true blue rebel, but I was also an American, right? Wasn't it my right to be presumed innocent? When you get right down to it, the most damning piece of evidence against me was the little red IWW membership card they found in my pocket. That convicted me more than any so-called evidence. So I figured if I was going to die for being a rebel, I might as well make the most of it. Because of my songs, thousands of wobblies from around the country wrote letters, marched, held rallies. I told them not to bother. Here's what I wrote. I think the organization should well use its resources to keep the live wires on the outside. I mean, the organizers and orators, when they are locked up, they are dead as far as the organization is concerned. A fellow like myself, for instance, can do just as well in jail. I can dope out my music and poems in here, slip them through the bars, and the world will never know the difference. Fact is, I did some of my best writing during those months in jail. Even when it became clear I would never get out of jail alive, I figured I was more important to the movement than alive. Like I said, my last words to Big Bill Hayward. Goodbye, Bill. I die like a true blue rebel. Don't waste time mourning. Organize. It's 100 miles from here to Wyoming. Could you arrange to have my body hauled across the state line to be buried? I don't want to be found dead in Utah. When I was a boy, everyone in our family played music. We kids learned to play the organ as soon as our feet could touch the pedals. And even as an adult, I'd rather play the violin than eat. As a devout Christians, we sang lots of gospel tunes. Of course, I'm still devout, but my religion now is my union and my music. Many of you here tonight may remember the good old church song, "There is Power in the Blood." Powerful message, but I think the message is even more powerful.
Would you have freedom from waste slavery? Enjoy in the grand industrial band? Would you from misery and hunger be free? Then come do your share, lend a hand. There is power, power in a band of working folks when they stand.
Block is a comic strip character created by Wobbly Ernest Reeb and first appeared in the November 7, 1912 edition of the Industrial Worker newspaper. Mr. Block is Legion, wrote fellow worker Walker C. Smith in 1913. He is representative of that host of slaves who think in terms of their masters. Mr. Block owns nothing, yet he speaks from the standpoint of the millionaire. He is patriotic without patrimony. He is a law-abiding outlaw who licks the hand that smites him and kisses the boot that kicks him. He personifies all that a worker should not be. So, of course, Joe Hill had to write a song about it. Mr. Block was one of Joe Hill's most popular songs.
Please give me your attention, and I'll introduce to you a man who is a credit to our old red, white, and blue. His head is made of lumber and solid as a rock. He is a common worker and his name is Mr. Block. And Block thinks that he may be president someday. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Yes, Mr. Block is lucky, he got a job by G. The shark got $7 for job and fare and fee. They shipped him to the desert and dumped him with his truck. But when he tried to find his job, he sure was out of luck. And he shouted, "That's too raw, I'll fix him with the law." Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Block hikes back to the city, he wasn't doing well. He said, "I'll join the union, the great AFL." He got a job that morning, got fired by the night. He said, "I'll see Sam Gompers and he'll fix that foreman right." Sam Gompers said, "You see, you've got our sympathy." Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Well, Blocky died one evening, I'm very sad to state. He climbed the golden ladder up to that pearly gate. He said, "Oh, Mr. Peter, one thing I'd like to tell. I'd love to meet the Astorbilts and John D. Rockefeller." "Oh, Pete said, is that so? You'll meet them down below." Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake.
Ah, yes. You know, a bum is on the rods, is hunted down, is an enemy of all mankind. You know, but that bum on the plush, he's driven to his club, feted, wined, dined. Oh, those who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that's bad, greet the other with a winning smile and extend him a hand so glad. A bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite. But the bum on the plush, he's a leech, blood-sucking day and night. A bum on the rods is a load so light we scarcely feel. But it takes the labor of a dozen men to furnish that other bum a meal. As long as you sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there. But if you get rid of that bum on the plush, the other will disappear. So make an intelligent, organized kick. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of that bum on the plush. If you all will shut your traps, I will tell you of a chap who is broken up against it for a fare. Well, he's not that kind of jerk. He's looking hard for work, but he heard the same old story everywhere. Tramp, 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 keep on a tramping. Nothing doing here for you. If I catch you here again, you will wear the ball and chain. Keep a tramping, that's the best thing you can do. Down the street, a sign he read, "Work for Jesus," so it said. Now he said, now here's my chance, I'll surely try. So he knelt down on the floor till his knees got rather sore. And at that mealtime, he heard the preacher cry.
Tramp, 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 keep on a trampin'. Nothing doing here for you. If I catch you here again, you will wear the ball and chain.
Keep a trampin',
that's the best thing you can do.
Down the street he met a cop, and that copper made him stop. And he said, hey boy, what time did you blow into town? And he said, let's go see that judge. But the judge, he said, no, fudge. Bums who haven't any money need to come around.
Tramp, 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 keep on a trampin'. Nothing doing here for you. If I catch you here again, you will wear the ball and chain.
Keep a trap,
and that's the best thing you can do.
Well, finally came that happy day when his life did pass away. Well, he thought he'd go to heaven when he died. But when he got to them pearly gates, St. Peter, that mean old skate, slammed the gate right in his face and loudly cried.
Tramp, 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 keep on a trampin'. Nothing doing here for you. If I catch you here again, you will wear the ball and chain. Keep a trampin', that's the best thing you can do.
Joe Hill writes songs that sing, that lift and laugh and sparkle, that kindle the fires of revolt in the most crushed spirit and quicken the desires for fuller life in the most humble slave. Even when sitting in jail facing execution, Joe wrote some of his best songs.
Dear Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, you have been an inspiration, and when I composed The Rebel Girl, was right there and helped me all this time. As you furnished the idea, I will now that I am gone, give you all the credit for that song, and be sure to locate a few more Rebel Girls like yourself, because they are needed, and needed badly. The IWW needs more women workers. They're exploited more than men. Our union has sadly neglected women, and consequently, we have created a kind of one-legged, freakish animal of a union.
Everyone knows some are living in beautiful mansions and are wearing the finest of clothes. There are blue-blooded queens and princesses who have charms made of diamonds and pearls. But the only thoroughbred lady is the the only thoroughbred lady
is that rebel girl. She's a rebel girl, a rebel girl to the working class. She's a shining pearl. From Maine to Georgia, you'll see, she's fighting for you and for me. She is there by your side with her courage and pride. She's unequaled in this world. And I'm proud to fight for freedom with that rebel girl. Yes, I'm proud to fight for our freedom with that rebel girl.
Ah, yes, union scabbing. Union scabbing. That's what trade unions brought about in 100 years ago. Union scabbing is when one union has a contract, and another one's out on strike, and they will go in and honor their own contract. Joe Hill called union scabbing, is this as if you are about to be hung, and you're led to the scaffold by the executioner, who turns to you and says, gee, I really hate to do this, but if it's any consolation to you, I mean, the scaffold was built by union carpenters, and the rope was made by union rope makers. And here, sir, is my card. That's union scabbing. The workers on the SB line, two strikes and not a call. Casey Jones, the engineer, he wouldn't strike at all. His boiler was a leaking and his driver's on the bum, and his whole dang engine was way out of plumb. Casey Jones kept his junk from moving. Casey Jones, working double time. Casey Jones got a wooden medal for being nice and faithful to that SB line. Yes, for being nice and faithful to that SB line. Well, the worker said to Casey, won't you help us win the strike? Casey said, leave me alone, boy, you'd better take a hike. Well, then Casey's engine went on that old worn-out tracks, and Casey hit the river bottom with an awful crack. Casey Jones hit the river bottom. Casey Jones broke his blooming spine. Casey Jones was an Angelino. He got a trip to heaven on that SB line. Yes, he got a trip to heaven on that SB line. Well, when Casey got together, heaven to the pearly gates, he said, boys, I'm Casey Jones, the man that pulled that SB freight. Well, you're just a man, so Peter, our musicians went on strike. You can get a job of scabbing anytime you like. Casey Jones got a job in heaven. Casey Jones was doing mighty fine. Casey Jones was scabbing on the angel, just like he did the workers on that SB line. Yes, just like he did the workers on that SB line. Well, the angels got together, decided it wasn't fair for Casey Jones to go around the scabbing everywhere. Well, the angels union number 23 was there. They quickly fired Casey down that golden stair. Casey Jones went to hell a-flying. Casey Jones, oh, the devil said, oh, fine. Casey Jones, get busy shoveling sulfur. That's what you get for scabbing on that SB line. Yeah, that's what you get for scabbing on that SB line. Yeah, what you get for scabbing on that SB line. Oh, yes, you do. Go down, go down.
What were Joe's thoughts on war? Most of his songs deal with class war, of course, but one dealt explicitly with armed revolution. During his lifetime, several Wobblies went to Mexico in an effort to support a workers' revolution. It is rumored that Joe Wendt himself shouldered a gun and took up the revolutionary freedom cry, Land and Liberty. We're spending billions every year on guns and ammunition. Our army and our navy dear to keep in good condition. While billions live in misery and billions died before us, don't sing my country to the thee, just sing this little chorus. Should I ever be a soldier, meet the red flag I would fight. Should a gun I ever shoulder, hit to crush the tyrant's might. Join the army of the toilers, men and women fall in line. Wage slaves of the world around, many a maiden pure and fair, her love and pride must offer on Mammon's altar in despair to fill the master's coffer. The gold that pays the mighty fleet from tender youth he squeezes, while brawny men must walk the street and face the wintry breezes. Should I ever be a soldier, meet the red flag I would fight. Should a gun I ever shoulder, it's to crush the tyrant's might. Join the army of the toilers, men and women fall in line. The wage slaves of the world around, do your duty for thousand miles from ocean, where hostile fleets could never run. Ain't that a funny notion? If you don't know the reason why, just strike for better wages. And then, my friends, if you don't die, you'll sing this song for ages. Should I ever be a soldier, the red flag I would fight. Should a gun I ever shoulder, it's to crush the tyrant's might. Join the army of the toilers, men and women fall in line. Wage slaves of the world around,
some IWW locals couldn't afford to waste money on renting union halls, so we did some of our best organizing on the sidewalks. Our soapbox orators, our songs. Of course, the coppers were always arresting us for disturbing the peace. Funny thing, though, when the Starvation Army sang their songs, the coppers let them be. So I think it was only balances the scale a little for me to take their songs and write our own words, like I did for their very lovely song, In the Sweet By and By. Oh, and by the way, if you've ever heard or used the word pie in the sky, here's where the phrase was born.
That's right, and Joe, you know, the first time they sang this song on the streets of Spokane during the free speech fight, Haywire Mac McClintock was the one that sang the song. He got the song from Joe, from you yourself. And they used the shill. They got a man, they dressed up one of their members in a suit and a tie, looked like a banker. And he stood on the street and he started yelling, "Help! Help! I've been robbed! I've been robbed!" And people gathered around and said, "I've been robbed by the capitalist system, fellow workers." And they sang this song.
Long-haired preachers come out every night, try to tell us what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet. You will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land above the sky. Till they get all your coin on the drum, then they'll tell you when you're on the bomb. You'll eat,
you'll eat,
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land above the sky,
way
up high, working
pray,
working pray, live
on hay, you'll get high in the sky when you die.
If you fight for this good thing in life, try to find something for children and wife. You're a sinner and bad man, they tell. When you die, you will sure go to hell. You will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land above the sky. Jumpers come out and they sing and they clap and they shout. Give your money to Jesus, they say. He will cure all diseases today. You will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land above the sky.
High,
work and pray,
work and pray.
Working folk of all countries unite. Side by side we for freedom will fight. When our share of this worth we have gained, to the grafters we'll sing this refrain. You will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
when you learn how to cook and how to fry. Chop some wood,
tomorrow, I expect to take a trip to the planet Mars, and if so, we'll immediately commence to organize the Mars Canal workers into the IWW, and we will sing the good old song so loud that the learned stargazers on Earth will once for all get positive proof that the planet Mars really is inhabited. I have nothing to say for myself, only that I have always tried to make this Earth a better place for the greater producing class. And I can pass off to the great unknown with the pleasure of knowing that I never in my life double-crossed a man, woman, or child.
Joe Hill was about as close to being a laureate of labor as any poet the working class has yet produced. His songs are as coarse as homespun and as fine as silk. Full of lilting laughter and keen-edged satire, full of fine rage and finer tenderness. Songs of and for the worker, written in the only language he can understand and set to the music of Joe Hill's heart. Those words were written over 100 years ago by fellow worker Ralph Chaplin, who worked tirelessly on behalf of his wobbly brother, Joe Hill. He gave speeches. He spoke at rallies. He wrote letters. He wrote poems and newspaper articles. And he gave an impassioned eulogy at Joe's funeral in Chicago. And, of course, that same year, 1915, 100 years ago, Ralph Chaplin wrote the song that would endure to become the anthem for all of organized labor. Even the AFL-CIO includes this song in their songbooks. Of course, just like Woody Guthrie's song, This Land Is Your Land, they tend to leave out some of the best verses.
Yes, they do. Eugene V. Debs, many, many, many years ago, said, 10,000 times has the labor movement stumbled, fallen, bruised itself, and then risen up, been seized by the neck, and choked into insensibility, enjoined by the courts, assaulted by thugs, attacked by the militia, shot down by the regulars, traduced by the press, frowned upon by public opinion, deceived by politicians, threatened by priests, repudiated by renegades, and infested by spies, betrayed by traitors, deserted by cowards, preyed upon by grafters, and sold out by its leaders. But notwithstanding this and all of these, the labor movement is the most potential, vital potential power this planet has ever known. And its historic mission of emancipating the workers of the world from the thraldom of the ages is as certain of ultimate realization as the setting sun.
Inspiration from the workers' blood does run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? For the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
We hold in common with the greedy parasite who would lash us into serfdom and would crush us with his might. Is there anything left to us but to organize and fight? For the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
Over. Without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
Wash the dishes, scrub the floors and chase the dirt, feed the kids and send them off to school, and then we go to work, where we work for lower wages, for a boss who likes to flirt. We shall make the union strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
Divide us by our color, they divide us by our tongue, they divide us men and women, they divide us old and young, but they'll tremble at our voices when they hear these first this song, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
Indeed, 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 my friends. 100 years ago, Joe Hill was executed, murdered by the state for those very sentiments. His last evening of his last day, he passed his last will and testament through the bars, and it said, "This is my last and final will." This is my last will. There is nothing much left to divide because there's nothing. Oh, no.
My will is
easy to divide because there is nothing left to decide. My kin needn't fuss and moan. Moss does not cling to a rolling stone. My body, if I could choose, to ashes I would it reduce. And let the merry breezes blow my dust to where some flowers grow. And perhaps then some faded flower there would rise and bloom again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to you all. Signed, Joe Hill.